Anthony Marco, and welcome to TV ABC's, where we have conversations about Canadian television before cameras, before cuts, before channels, and explore how the people behind your favorite shows are being creative. This week, TVA's Greg David talks host-to-host with Jesse Cruikshank. Jesse Cruikshank is one of Canada's most beloved TV personalities and has been hailed as one of the funniest women on TV today, period, by the province. Cruikshank grew up in Vancouver, where she broke into comedy as the only girl in an all-male improv troupe alongside Seth Rogen. She soon became a household name as the face of MTV, hosting the daily comedy show MTV Live and smash hit The Hills After Show, which was syndicated in 10 countries and generated record-breaking ratings in Canada and the U.S. Cruikshank went on to host Live from E!, Jerseylicious, Olympic Morning, and recently wrapped 6 seasons as the LA correspondent for Canada's number one entertainment show, E!Talk. She's also traveled the world as a keynote speaker and the Canadian ambassador for Free the Children. Cruikshank returned to CBC in the fall of 2016 as one of the co-hosts of CBC's highly anticipated new daytime show, The Goods, and to host season 3 of Canada's Smartest Person. We'll hear about all of that and more in Greg's conversation with Jesse Cruikshank.
So this is really great that you're doing this, because I love nothing more than a long-form podcast.
Excellent.
I have listened
to... What do you listen to?
Oh, God, everything. I mean, I've probably listened to every WTF episode.
Yeah,
which is,
okay.
You know.
Yep.
Nerdist. I listen to Nerdist.
Yes.
I listen to a podcast now called Two Dope Queens.
Okay.
Which I highly recommend, which
All
is
right.
like two like loud, brash comedians in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
I mean, I listen to, like, stuff you should know. I listen to a wide variety.
So do you,
Alec Baldwin's podcast.
Yes, I listen to him. Here's
it's
the
hilarious.
Thing.
Hilarious.
Yes.
Here's the thing.
When he's not too much talking about himself. Like, sometimes he'll get into the talking about him. It's like, okay, Alec, we know you're a soap opera actor. Can you talk about the other person? Because I want to know about them. I know all about you.
Right.
But is that the way, like, for me, if I'm cleaning the house or grocery shopping or driving or commuting, it's podcasts. I'm less and less listening to music now.
Me too. And
yeah.
I feel, I don't know if this is like a I'm not young anymore thing. Like, when you get old, you start to do this.
Right.
But I long for the days where I used to listen, throw on like a new album and listen. Now I'm just like, is it Thursday yet? Is there a new long form podcast
I
can listen to?
Do you know what it is? I think it's our version of AM radio. So we are turning into grandparents.
Totally.
I just realized that it's this generation's version of AM radio.
Yeah, we're so old. I have no, and like, it's true too that, because when I shoot here,
yeah.
I live by myself,
yeah.
and I don't like the silence
the
anymore.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I like to have
voices
in my head at
yep.
all times.
Yep.
I listen, this is now we're just getting very intimate, but I listen to podcasts in my sleep. I sleep. Yeah, I know it's terrifying.
Like, to go to sleep,
yes.
you're listening to podcasts?
Yes, but then I wake up the next morning and I'm 12 podcasts down.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
You binge listen while you're sleeping.
I just binge listen. I'll start with a new one and it'll lull me to sleep. Last night I did the Hollywood Reporter podcast. I
okay.
started on Helen Mirren, which
okay.
is a recent one.
Yeah, yeah.
And I ended up like way back at like a
Somewhere
12 Years
80s.
A Slave
yeah.
interview
yeah.
from 2012.
Yeah.
That's how I know I've had a good sleep
wow.
when I've gone through like 7 podcasts.
I'm also listening to, I'm waiting for the second season of Someone Knows Something, the CBC podcast.
Yes.
The true crime one about the missing kid out near Kingston.
I've heard about it. I haven't listened.
The second season's coming up.
Is it like a Canadian serial?
Yep.
So a better serial is what?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
Yes. Yes. But let's talk about you.
Oh, gosh.
So I think I've said to you this, I've said this to you before, but the first time that you were on my radar was when I was at TV Guide Canada, and you and Dan Levy were doing The Hills After Show. Because that was such a big thing. Like, nobody had ever seen The Hills. There was no such thing as an after show.
Yeah.
Until what you guys were doing. So, before that, like, how did you get into the industry in the first place? Because I know that you did some sketch and improv stuff in high school.
Mm-hmm.
But how did you get into TV specifically?
Well, my mom was in TV.
Okay.
My whole childhood.
Okay.
Ironically, my mother had a show at the CBC when
oh,
I was a kid.
Oh, okay.
Although, please, this is nothing, like, it's not nepotism. I did
yeah, you,
not
you don't
get,
want any of this
yeah,
full circle
no.
stuff.
She
but.
Has long left the television world, but when I was a little kid, my
yeah.
mom was very much a working mom, and I feel like in the 90s, I would say it was like 50-50. So my friends had stay-at-home moms and working moms. So it was
yeah.
still sort of a unique thing to have a working mom. She was always off shooting. She was traveling a lot for her show. She started doing a show for seniors called The Best Years
okay.
on the CBC, which
okay.
ran for many years. And then she did the first ever health show called Alive, The Picture of Health, Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. It was like before Dr. Oz existed.
And this is Vancouver?
Yeah, okay. She shot out of the CBC in Vancouver.
Okay.
So as a kid, like, I grew up missing my mom and being bummed that she wasn't there to bake me cookies.
Yeah.
On Sunday mornings, I would watch her. Like, we would sit with my dad and my sister. We would watch my mom on TV. And so that was, like, something I think that it was in my brain as a little kid, that this was potentially a job.
Right.
That one could do.
Right.
And then I went to college and had much loftier prospects. Like, I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be, at one point, I wanted to be a doctor. I wanted to do something important with my life.
Yeah.
Did you ever have that aspiration?
I didn't have any aspirations until grade 12 when I did really well on my journalism exam and thought, oh, well, maybe I should take that in college. That was it.
And then that worked for you.
I guess having no aspirations at all.
Beyond that?
Worked out pretty well in the long run. But yeah.
Perfect. Yeah, so I wanted to do something really important, and I started, like, I taught special needs for a long time. I still teach a class on Saturdays.
Okay.
That was really important to me. That's working with people with Down syndrome and autism, and that was something that I sort of wanted to perhaps specialize in.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was at U of T, there was a posting to be a YTV kids show host, and I thought that it would pay me better than my job at Canada's Wonderland, where I was employed as a pirate wench.
On the ship? Were you serving food?
No. I'm above that, Greg.
Okay,
I'll
just let you tell me.
My legitimate job title on the contract that I signed and on my paycheck said pirate wench. This was my job title at Canada's Wonderland. I was dressed in a wench ensemble.
Sure.
Which basically was a license to be sexually harassed every day of the summer.
Yes.
And I would work at I did the diving show. So there was like pirate, actually legitimately talented divers that would die. And I was
just
the wench entertainer.
It was right by the dragon fire.
Yeah.
People would sit and watch the guys jumping off the mast.
Yeah.
That awful drop.
Yes. That was
me. Oh my God.
Our getting the crowd pumped up. And the most cruel punishment that they don't tell you at Canada's Wonderland is that we were like the lowest rung of performers.
Oh, yeah.
Even the mascots who dressed as Scooby-Doo were treated better than we were. We were the wenches of what I imagine, like, the real wenchhood was like. So our dressing room or green room or, you know, break room was across the park, which meant that when the show ended, we had to walk in costume with, like, horny 14-year-old boys wanting to take it was an unusual kind of torture. But I did get paid $100 a day, which, I was rich.
Yeah.
Rich.
Because you're not spending it when you're at work. So,
no.
So you decided to go from that lofty position to YTV.
So that was like the beginning of making money, quote unquote, performing, if you will. And then I saw this YTV posting. I thought maybe this would be better than going back for a second summer of sexual harassment in a wench outfit. And I auditioned. And I remember there was like this open audition and everybody wanted to do it. And there was like a lineup. And we had to just walk in and make a peanut butter and jam sandwich on camera. This was the task. You just, a fake one, like you had to mime.
Okay.
Making a peanut butter and jam sandwich and improvise it. I don't remember what I did, but somehow I got the job. So that for the next 2 summers, I paid my way through university hosting a traveling children's show for YTV.
What were you taking at university?
English and drama.
Okay. Well, the drama
and women's studies.
Okay,
throw that in there.
Yeah. Okay.
It was the kind of degree that makes your parents really nervous.
Sure, because you're like, well, what are you going to do? It's perfectly suited to working at Wonderland.
Absolutely, they were probably thrilled that I got that job at Wonderland. They were
at least you're using the drama part.
Yeah. Yes.
So then, you know, obviously the performance side of things, you're taking what you took in high school and you're using some of those skills, and then you're taking drama at school. But how did the after show happen? I mean, I know you and Dan and others were doing the whole MTV Live thing.
Yeah.
And you guys had auditioned for the after show and gotten that gig, right?
We were all brought on. I think they brought 7 hosts on just to launch MTV Canada. So that was a torturous meeting after meeting after general audition sort of scenario, we all got jobs on the show, and we were all originally just doing MTV Live, which was sort of Darren Jones anchored it, and we would rotate, and it was kind of a live comedy show. And then because MTV at the time, you know more than I do about this, I'm sure, but it had a, we had a talk license.
Yeah,
we didn't have a music license.
That's right.
Because, you know, God forbid there be any competition in television in this country. Mm-hmm, so Much Music had the music.
Yes.
We had the talk.
Yes.
So our brilliant president and vice president of MTV in Canada, who were both under 35 at the time, and it was a really young, creative place to be, had to figure out ways to create talk content and Canadian content around all these American shows we were getting. Mm-hmm. So when we launched in 2006-07, Laguna Beach had already been airing in the U.S., and we had all these backlogged episodes that we wanted to start rolling out in Canada, and how can we have a Canadian component and a talk component to fulfill the licensing agreement. So our VP, Mark McInnes, came up with this idea that we would do, it would be like sports. It would be like our post-game show.
So it was because of the CRTC mandate that this show became created.
100%.
That's
this is
crazy.
This is why the Game of Thrones after show exists. This is why the Talking Dead, it's because of the stupid CRTC mandate.
See, sometimes the mandate's good. Look.
Oh, it was good. Hey, it was good. It worked for me, I'll say that.
Well, it must have blown you guys away because that show just took off and became a water cooler show. I remember people in the office talking about you guys. So it must have been crazy to be riding that along with Dan and going, like, what is happening? Like, it's crazy.
It was crazy. I will say at the beginning when they told me the idea, which was, you know, you're going to sit around and you're going to talk about this show.
Yep.
They asked me, they gave us DVDs.
Yeah.
They said, watch this show, tell us what you think.
Yeah.
And I went into the vice president's office and I said, I think this show is bullshit. Mm-hmm. I think this is garbage. I think this is, I'm coming fresh out of university.
Sure.
I had, like I told you, I had lofty aspirations.
Yeah.
I said, this is, it's like anti-feminist and the message and the, it's these are vapid teenagers with no values. And he said, too bad, because you're going to be talking about it for 30 minutes every day live on Fridays. And at that time, it was literally, we were live Fridays at 11 o'clock, I think, at night, and our martinis that we were drinking were real at that time. So there, like, it was just, we were just shooting the shit.
Right.
We were we had a Telestrator. It was kind of the sports idea, so we were drawing on things, and we didn't think anyone was watching. And then, by the time Laguna Beach, I think the finale happened, we had a big finale show, and we were flying out some of the cast members. And at 1 o'clock in the afternoon, they said, we have a bit of a problem. And Dan and I said, what's that? They said, the police had to come and shut down Yonge Street because there's so many people lined up outside to come and watch the show. There were 800 people was the capacity in our building, and we had like 3,000 lined up. We didn't even know anyone beyond our mothers were watching. So that, it was a very surreal experience. And then the whole, when the hills blew up, to be a part of that, and then when the U.S. bought our show, we were the first live syndicated show ever to air in Canada and the U.S. in the history of television.
Yeah.
Like, who would have thought?
You had that attitude about the show, you know, but that really helped when it came time to be filming the after show, because you bringing that attitude, obviously everybody watching the show had those same feelings, or a lot of those same feelings. So being that way and talking about the show that way, I mean, if you'd been gushy and talking about how great it was, it probably wouldn't have worked. The fact that you guys were constantly rolling your eyes at it made it so much fun to watch.
I think that's probably really accurate. And and now that I think about these shows, they're created with the show. So the Walking Dead is very much a part of the Talking Dead.
Yes.
It has to be positive.
Yes.
It has to have guests from the show.
Yep.
Our show was completely independent.
Yeah, that's
MTV US, the makers of Laguna Beach, had no idea we were doing this. And so we had no reservations about what we were saying or couldn't say.
Right.
And certainly I think it was all out of love. Like, we were never...
You weren't mean and say, you know...
Mean,
yeah, you
right.
weren't personal about... You didn't get personal about it.
Sometimes I think we got a little personal, yeah. but it was all out of this, an obsession
right.
for the show.
Right, right,
right. We weren't judging you for watching.
Yeah.
We were just as guilty as you,
yeah.
our viewer, is
That's
for
right.
watching.
That's
we're
right.
all in this together, but
yeah.
like, let's talk a little shit about what we just saw together. And the other thing I think is interesting, too, upon a reflection, is that we were Canadian. We are Canadian, mm-hmm. and the show was coming from not necessarily intentionally Canadian perspective, but as we are, Dan and I, we don't know what it's like to live in California. We don't know what it's like to have, I mean, I speak for myself, parents with mansions and
yeah.
money, and I'm
yeah.
like a middle class chick.
Right.
I don't know what that's like. So
right.
we can speak about that life as total outsiders.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And we had a lot of fun with that, I think, too.
One of the other things is you were an early adopter of social media. What's that been like, riding that wave and figuring out how to communicate with people in a medium where you get positive feedback, but you also get negative feedback? What's that been like?
So weird. I mean, it's weird that when we started the show, Twitter, I remember Dan and I both talked on the show about how we had Twitter accounts and,
yeah.
and how novel this was
yeah.
and you can tweet us. And, you know, we had a few, 10, 20, 100, mm. thousands. Suddenly, you know, that following started to grow. And when we started on Twitter, our following was exclusively from our show. So
mm-hmm.
everyone was... It was super positive. You
right.
were part of the show. You knew who was following you online. Now that everybody is online, it's just a free-for-all. And I find, you know, as someone who started in comedy, and what I do is still very much comedy, social media is just killing.
Mm-hmm.
It kills comedy
mm-hmm.
because everybody has an opinion. Everybody is offended by something.
Right.
Nobody is if you're doing something in the room, if you're doing stand-up at a venue, or if you're doing hosting, like I toast a word, you know, I make
yeah.
a joke at an award show, someone repeats it on Twitter, suddenly everybody's offended. It's like, well, you weren't in the room. You didn't know, you don't know the tone, you don't
right.
know. So I think it's sort of just... Lately, it's becoming something that I have found to be, I used to embrace it and look to it and love every aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have to sort of ignore it if
mm-hmm.
I want to keep doing what I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I want to talk a little bit about writing. Like, when you're doing red carpet interviews with people, have you written all of those questions? Okay.
Yeah, very much so.
So
that's my secret, though. You secret's out.
So, but it's very much carte blanche. Like, are you kind of working? There's a little bit of aspect of working on the fly as
uh-huh.
well, depending on what their answer is, right?
Yeah. Yes. I'm a major over-preparer, though, and super involved.
See, that doesn't come across.
That's, thank you, that's amazing, that's great.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you are, you're totally, yeah.
Yes. So I tend to write all of my own stuff, and I don't want to discredit the incredible producers
sure.
I work with. We
yeah.
work as a team, but I take their ideas and I rework or rewrite or make them fun or funny or my own, and then... I will prep or think about things that I could say in different scenarios
mm-hmm.
based on the answers I get.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say like 50% of it is totally prepared and 50% of it is improv. But my goodness, do I ever prepare for those to make them look unprepared.
So how, say you're doing a red carpet in a week.
Uh-huh.
How much time in advance do you start working on that?
Oh, like the night before.
Okay, all right.
Because,
I was thinking, because, yeah, that's the way I work, too.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, so I see. You Wikipedia'd me last
oh,
night.
Oh, I did this on
saying.
I did this on the bus.
Yeah.
That's why my handwriting's all messed up. No, but, like, yeah, like, because we have so much, you know, IMDb at our fingertips and Google search and everything.
Yeah.
But it is all about finding your own voice,
mm-hmm.
isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And making it, because people know when you're going off of a script.
Yes.
Like, right off the bat. They
yeah.
can feel that. When they can feel that you don't have input into what you're saying, right?
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
I think 100%. I think there are two kinds of TV, quote-unquote, hosting is a very... I hate that word.
Yeah.
I hate that job description because I don't know if that's necessarily what I... It ranges. There
yeah.
are some people who... show up to work every day and, you know, put on a face and an outfit and read off a teleprompter and go home and can sleep at night. And I wish I could be one of those people, but I couldn't live with myself if I was. Everything I do is I you know, I'm a part of it. I write it. I help create what the segment will be. I have to sleep with podcast playing because I'm so anxious about what I'm doing the next day. You know, it's like very, it's not, I could never read just what someone else was telling me to do. If I could, I would be an actor.
But I'm
terrible at acting because I would want to change everything that people gave me. But there is my secret. This is like my big secret to celebrity interviews, and I credit again working in Canada and working at MTV. We were literally in a basement at the Masonic Temple. We were the last place that any celebrity who came to Toronto would go. And if we were lucky enough to get that celebrity to come in and do an interview with us, we were after Etalk, ET Canada, every morning show, every news show. We were literally stop 30 as Mark Wahlberg is going to the airport. If he has time, he will come to MTV. And so by the time he gets there, you have seen that person on every single Canadian show. And so my goal, whenever I had an opportunity to interview a celebrity who was in town, was just how can I guarantee that what I do is going to be different from the other 30 outlets that that person has done in the last 2 days. And so that attitude of like, well, what can I do that you're never going to see anywhere else has totally, I've taken that with me. And even at eTalk, when I was there and got to be the first person to interview someone, my goal was always to make it, to guarantee that when Jesse interviews someone, you're going to see something that you won't see anywhere else. And that, I think, is just from being the bottom of the barrel when we were over at MTV, getting people laughs.
But not only do you want to connect with the audience and have them say that, but you want the person that you're interviewing to remember you as well, right? Because there's no better feeling than them having, you know, saying that was fun or that was a good question, and then them remembering you the next time they're in town, rather than you just being, oh, you must be 15 out of the 30 people that I talked to last time.
Well, and junkets, as you know, are just, they're, those are like, that's like school for how to do a different interview, because people, you go in one after the other after the other, and everyone asks the same question. I also think, actually, and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't really care to know what it was like for Mark Wahlberg to work on this movie. In what's a funny story from the set? What was it like to work with Meryl Streep? What was it like in Toronto? I don't care. I want to see a moment with Mark Wahlberg that I'm not going to see anywhere else. I want to see, I just want to see that person in a different way.
Right.
And so that was always my goal. Even if it was like to make the celebrity a little bit uncomfortable. That's different. I think I also just didn't ever and still don't ever give a shit what people think of me. Is that terrible? Like, some celebrity interviewers or people who want to be liked. Want to be friends with that person. Want to, like, get a date with that. I am well aware that that is not going to happen for me, and I just want to go in and get a good interview.
So before we talk about the goods and Canada's Smartest Person, one of the things that we do when Anthony, Marco, and I do our newsy podcast is we record it at night because I'm here in Toronto and he's in Hamilton, and we usually record it around 10 o'clock at night. So we're unwinding. So we're usually having an adult beverage. So for me lately, when I'm unwinding, it's ciders. I've been drinking ciders lately because beer tends to make me feel all kind of gross and everything, and sometimes wine. But we're recording this just to, so that people know, we're recording this at 1 o'clock in the afternoon at the CBC building. So I'm assuming you haven't had anything alcoholic to drink so far. But is there something when you're winding down at the end of the day that you like to drink? And it doesn't have to have alcohol in it. If it's tea or coffee or a milkshake, that's fine too. But is there something that you like to wind down with at night?
Well, I had, it's funny you should say, last night I had the whole goods team over to my house. And so there was a lot of winding down that happened. I feel like I'm a real housewife by saying this, but lately I've been really into white wine spritzers. This is a white wine with a soda water, ice, and a hearty amount of lemon. I'm like I'm literally a 47-year-old divorcee drinking this beverage, but I will wind down. I will wind down with a white wine spritzer.
Well, because you don't want to have anything too heavy when you're working the next day.
No, you need a little hydration while you're
drinking. Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah,
but I have no problem with solo drinking. Is that bad?
No.
Thank you.
That's fine. As long as there's no crying. Is there crying, too?
There, sometimes there's crying. No. Okay. Well, actually, no. There's on occasion. On occasion. But, you know, the white wine spritzer makes it all better.
Oh, God.
Although,
that's great.
Do you know, so this is Dan Levy, who shoots Schitt's Creek in Toronto. We have reverse shooting schedules, and so we share a home.
Oh, interesting.
Fun fact.
Okay.
So when I moved in to start shooting The Goods and he left all these ciders in the fridge, and I was like, who drinks, what is this beverage, Daniel Levy, a cider? Now I know.
And I was introduced to it by a fellow actor named, I'm not a fellow actor, so I don't know why I said fellow actor, but Randall Edwards, who was on a City TV sitcom called Package Deal.
Uh-huh.
And we went out for beers, and he had cider. And I'm like, what is this thing that you're drinking? And now, so I've been trying out all these different ciders. So, so it's
beverage.
Good to know that Dan and I
share.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, hey, I haven't really gotten into them, so they're still in my fridge.
There you
if
go.
You ever want to come over, wind down. I got ciders, and I got leftover Schitt's Creek ciders in my fridge.
So what? And again, this is another question that I've asked you before. But I thought it was interesting, you know, working with CBC. First of all, hosting Canada's Smartest Person, and then now specifically also with The Goods. So what was it about Canada's Smartest Person and coming over to work for CBC that was attractive to you, other than your mom working at CBC, and you want... No, I'm just kidding.
Well, I did want to make my mother proud. Let me just say that. My poor parents had dealt with the pirate wench, and then talking about, you know, rich
talking
California.
Talking shit about reality shows
for a living. My parents... part of me was like, wow, my parents would be really happy if I hosted this show. And I just... I had just done Oh Sit, which is a big game show on the CW, like a big Wipeout style game show.
Yes.
And ironically, while I was doing that show, I thought, this could kill my career. This is really fun. I get to watch people fall in water with Jamie Kennedy. We get to make jokes about these people, but I might not have a career after this.
Right.
And the fact that CBC called me and they had actually seen that show and said, you've hosted a game show. Would you like to do something maybe with a little more intelligence? And I was jumping, like chomping at the bit to do something that was not just about people in spandex falling into water. So it felt like a good combination of the skills I had learned in this giant game show world.
Right.
With, you know, using my university education and my intelligence and getting to meet cool Canadians. Like, that was really, really attractive to me. It was doing something that was a little bit smarter. Because I feel like when I started, I was really young, and viewers who grew up watching me were really young. Mm-hmm. And I felt like it was kind of cool to be able to grow up a little bit with my people who have grown up with me watching.
What can you say about this third season of Canada's Smartest Person?
Like, it's so good.
Are they updated challenges?
Yeah.
And of course, the contestants are way more savvy because the show's been around for a couple of seasons, right?
Yes. And you know what? This season, the contestants are big. They have big personalities. They're stars, man. We have we have great people on the show this year. And we start, we're starting with a speed round, so we're starting with six and cutting it down right away to four.
Oh.
I know, it's not very Canadian of us.
No, it's not.
It's really quite cutthroat. So, but it right off the top of the show, it's like fast-paced speed round. You fall in love with six people, and then you instantly lose two of them, and we cut down throughout the show, so we end up with only our final two. So it's like, it moves really fast this year. The challenges are crazy, and I think it's a little more relatable because there aren't a lot of rocket scientists or chemists on the show. This year, we're kind of focusing on real Canadians who have these sort of brilliant minds.
So whose decision was it to make it a little bit more relatable? Is that the producers? Did everybody kind of get together and do a post-mortem and say, how do we kind of shake the show up a bit?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And CBC is really, really involved, which has been amazing. Mm-hmm. And I have always really wanted to focus on the characters because we shoot I think you know this. Mm-hmm. That show is shot in an hour. We try to make it feel live, but it takes like 14 hours to shoot one episode.
Yeah.
And so I get to know these people.
Right.
Like, we're all friends on the internet. We are, me and the contestants, mm-hmm. we get really close mm-hmm. by the end of the day. Mm-hmm. And I always felt that it was, we were sort of missing getting to really know them in that time. So I have often fought for us to kind of get to know our competitors a little bit more. And I think we're doing that this season.
And then when it comes to the writing, you know, hosting a TV show is very different. I'm assuming you've got a teleprompter because you need to know, right?
Oh.
Some of it?
Yes, but I am a writer on the show. So
okay.
Me and...
Is that since season one that you were a writer?
No, I started out as just a host,
yes.
and by this first episode on season one, they were like, oh, so you write all your own stuff, okay. And then they made me an official writer. So yes, I'm an official writer on the show, and I host it. So we definitely have a teleprompter,
right.
But this, in my opinion, the secret to making it look like you're not reading a teleprompter is if you actually wrote the stuff that you're reading.
Right. Are you a producer on the show yet?
I mean...
Like your name credited as a
producer? I don't think I'm credited as a producer, but, okay. you know, I get in there.
You're also co-hosting The Goods.
Mm-hmm.
CBC's daytime show with Steven Sabatos, Shahir Massoud, and Andrea Bain.
Oh, look, he's referring to his notes now.
Well, because I want to get everybody's name right, because
yeah.
I am here in the green room for The Goods. What attracted you to The Goods? Were you looking to, because you had to give up. You gave up your relationship with Bell Media and working with the folks over at eTalk, which is not an easy decision to make.
Mm-hmm.
So what was it about that said, yeah, this is right for me and this is what I want to do now?
It was a really hard decision. I love everybody at eTalk.
Sure.
I was so lucky to work at that show.
Mm-hmm.
And I had 10 amazing years at Bell Media. And I hope to go back. And they, you know, the doors, I think, are open there for me.
Yeah, you haven't burned any
nice.
Bridges with them, have you?
Not yet. No,
yeah.
not at all.
Yeah.
They were so supportive. I think it's just, I always like to have a new challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I left MTV after 5 years because I sort of felt like we had done everything that I wanted to do there.
Yeah.
And at eTalk, I think it for me, I was like ready for the next thing. And daytime is not something I ever imagined doing, especially I think at this stage of my career. And it was very exciting, the idea of doing a daily show and the privilege of being in people's homes every day during the day was really exciting.
What's been interesting to me about this show mm-hmm. is how unlike daytime shows are. Like, mm-hmm. you know, when people say, oh, it's CBC's daytime show, you have a vision of what that is.
Yeah.
You guys are doing a lot more sketches and bits that I was not expecting.
Oh,
was that
good.
Something out of the gate in the planning stages that you guys are coming up with? Or is that something that as you've been in production, you've been going, yeah, let's do that?
No, it's the opposite. When we started, when I started, I wanted to do like daytime like you've never seen it before. I had all of these lofty goals to do something that people would be completely thrown by. And the CBC sort of talked me off the ledge and we have found, I think, a happy medium.
Okay.
Or we are starting to find a happy medium.
Yeah.
I think we'll kind of ask me at episode 130 and I'll tell you where we're at on the scale of finding what the show is.
Yeah.
But I think that we're sort of figuring out how to kind of still do stuff that is weird and different mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. entertainment
mm-hmm.
and balance it with the sort of lifestyle and entertainment / education side that people want takeaway during the day.
Right.
So I'm learning how to kind of scale it back, and CBC is learning what they will allow me to do.
You said that you didn't picture that you'd be doing this at this point in your career.
Yeah.
So what did you picture? Did you picture...
I don't think I pictured to be... I thought I'd be unemployed by this time. I don't know. I'm just happy to be working in television. For some reason, I think I grew up thinking that, like, you're old if you're in daytime. Like, daytime is something you do when you're in your 40s or when, you know, and I think it has been in the past.
Yeah.
So it was, it's exciting to be you know, doing a younger version of daytime.
So I just got the... we've got 2 minutes left.
Oh,
they open the door.
No.
So that's okay, because I have two questions.
Okay.
The first one is children's shows. Was there any, what did you grow up watching when you were a kid?
Oh my gosh.
That made an impact on you? Yes.
I recently received an email in my inbox. Okay, I'm just refreshing, checking my email. From Fred Penner.
What?
Thank you. It was one of the greatest moments of my 2016, I will say.
Yeah.
Fred Penner, I grew up watching, idolized, like would stay home, quote unquote, sick from school to watch him crawl through the log. The word bird taught me how to run my vocabulary. And I mean, I just thought he's brilliant. And I said something about it on CBC, did a Canadian tribute on Canada on July the 1st on Canada Day. And I talked about my love of Fred Penner. And he watched this, took it upon himself to find my public email address on the internet that goes through people and gets to me to write me to say thank you. That meant a lot. I know.
That's very cool.
So I took me 3 days to write an email back to Fred Penner.
Sure.
I was so nervous.
Need to make sure the grammar's right, the spelling is right and everything.
Oh, God.
So,
yeah.
So Fred Penner, what else?
Fred Penner, I mean, I was very much like Under the Umbrella Tree.
Yes.
Polka Dot Door. Yep. Are these all connected? Mr. Dress Up.
They can be American too. If there's stuff that you watch when you, in the 80s for me, it was the A-Team and Magnum and Knight Rider and all that. So whatever.
Okay. So what I've just mentioned are my childhood elementary school.
Yes.
When
you were a little kid.
Pretend to be sick to stay home from school.
Right.
And then I was a full 90s TGIF kid.
Okay.
Like Family Matters and Step by Step and Full House, and after school it was Saved by the Bell. I also, because I did have a working mom, would come home from school and was sort of, I mean, I hope she won't listen to this because she doesn't even know how to find the camera on her phone, let alone a podcast. So I will say this, I was raised by Ricky Lake and Sally Jesse Raphael and Phil Donahue. Like, I think I learned about sex and relationships from 3 p.m. after school with Ricky Lake. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Unsupervised.
And I have one last question.
Please.
And this is about your charities.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me quickly about the charities that you're involved with.
Ooh, well, Free the Children is something I got involved with when I was 12 years old. Craig Kielberger started this organization.
Yeah.
He was on the cover of the newspaper, and I remember thinking, who's this cute boy on my newspaper? Is this a new Hansen brother? What is this? And it was Craig Kielberger who had held this press conference to talk about the plight of child laborers in India, and I was so taken with it, I started a little Free the Children chapter in my school at 12 or 13.
Oh,
and now, and then 10 years later, he called me when I was at MTV and asked me to be an ambassador and work with them. So that's something that I'm really passionate about. I've traveled with them. I've done a few documentaries with them. And now I do a lot of traveling to host Wee Days for them and sort of do a lot of youth empowerment work and speaking here in Canada about how kids can get involved. And that has been amazing to see young people who we so often think of as being apathetic or about, you know, being always on their phones or caring about vapid things. Now they're total, I mean, many of them are very engaged and socially minded, and that's been a really cool thing to be a part of. And then because of my work with people with special needs and Down syndrome and autism, I'm very much an advocate for that community, and I have spoken out a lot about the R word, and that's something that I really spend a lot of time. I mean, I spent a lot of time in that world.
Well, thanks to Jesse Cruikshank for sitting down and having a long-form conversation with Greg David, host to host, so to speak, as we sit here and listen on the TV ABCs podcast. Every couple of weeks, we try and do a TV ABCs where either myself or Greg talks to somebody from the Canadian television industry, whether from in front of or behind the camera. And every other week, Greg and I sit down and we just talk about the news of Canadian television in general. We hope you like both of those styles of episodes. And if you do, and you would care to help contribute to some of the efforts that we do around here on the podcast, please feel free to go to our Patreon page, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/TV_EH. And if you think we're doing great and you enjoy watching to the tune of a dollar an episode or a few dollars a month or however you want to do it, please feel free to let us know through monetary indulgence, shall you? Anyway, you can find Greg on Twitter at Greg_David. You can find me on Twitter at Anthony Marco. You can find TVA on Twitter at TV_EH. Find all of the stories that Greg regularly files at TV-EH.com. We do have one more installment of Greg's hosting duties on the panel at the Murdoch Mysteries event that happened back at the beginning of October. And that wraps up another episode for this week. And now back to your regularly scheduled programming.